As Dirk edged his way along the Euston Road, caught in the middle of a rush-hour traffic jam that had started in the late 1970s, and which, at 9:45 on this Thursday evening, still showed no signs of abating, he thought he caught sight of something he recognised. It was his subconscious which told him this, that infuriating part of a person's brain which never responds to interrogation, merely gives little meaningful nudges, and then sits humming quietly to itself, saying nothing. "Well, of course I've just seen something I recognise," Dirk muttered mentally to his subconscious. "I drive along this benighted thoroughfare 20 times a month. I expect I recognise every single matchstick lying in the gutter. Can't you be a little bit more specific?" His subconscious would not be hectored, though, and was dumb. It had nothing further to add. The city was probably full of grey vans anyway. Very unremarkable. "Where?" Dirk muttered to himself fiercely, twisting round in his seat, this way and that. "Where did I see a grey van?" Nothing. He was thoroughly hemmed in by the traffic, and could not manoeuvre in any direction, least of all forward. He erupted from his car, and started to jostle his way back through the jammed cars, bobbing up and down to try and see where, if anywhere, he might have caught a glimpse of a grey van. If he had seen one, it eluded him now. His subconscious sat and said nothing. The traffic was still not moving, so he tried to thread his way further back, but was obstructed by a large motorcycle courier, edging his way forward on a huge, grimy Kawasaki. Dirk engaged in a brief altercation with the courier, but lost it, because the courier was unable to hear Dirk's side of the altercation. Eventually Dirk retreated through the tide of traffic, which now was beginning slowly to move in all lanes other than the one in which his car sat, driverless, immobile, and hooted at. He felt suddenly elated by the braying of the motor horns, and as he swayed and bobbed his way back through the snarled-up column of cars, he suddenly found that he reminded himself of the crazies he had seen on the streets of New York, who would career out into the road to explain to the oncoming traffic about the Day of Judgment, imminent alien invasions, and incompetence and corruption in the Pentagon. He put his hands above his head and started to shout out, "The gods are walking the earth! The gods are walking the earth!" This further inflamed the feelings of those who were beeping their horns at his stationary car, and quickly the whole rose through a crescendo of majestic cacophony, with Dirk's voice ringing out above it. "The gods are walking the earth! The gods are walking the earth!" he hollered. "The gods are walking the earth! Thank you," he added, and ducked down into his car, put it into drive and pulled away, allowing the whole jammed mass at last to seethe easily forward. He wondered why he was so sure. An act of God. Merely a chance, careless phrase by which people were able to dispose conveniently of awkward phenomena that would admit of no more rational explanation. But it was the chance carelessness of it which particularly appealed to Dirk, because words used carelessly, if they did not matter in any serious way, often allowed otherwise well-guarded truths to seep through. An inexplicable disappearance. Oslo and a hammer. A tiny, tiny coincidence which struck a tiny, tiny note. However, it was a note which sang in the midst of the daily hubbub of white noise, and other tiny notes were singing at the same pitch. An act of God. Oslo and a hammer. A man with a hammer trying to go to Norway is prevented, loses his temper, and as a result, there is an act of God. If, thought Dirk, if a being were immortal, he would still be alive today. That, quite simply, was what immortal meant. How would an immortal being have a passport? Quite simply, how? Dirk tried to imagine what might happen if, to pick a name quite at random, the god Thor, he of the Norwegian ancestry and the great hammer, were to arrive at the passport office and try to explain who he was and how come he had no birth certificate. There would be no shock, no horror, no loud exclamations of astonishment, just blank bureaucratic impossibility. It wouldn't be a matter of whether anybody believed him or not, it would simply be a question of producing a valid birth certificate. He could stand there wreaking miracles all day if he liked, but at close of business, if he didn't have a valid birth certificate, he would simply be asked to leave. And credit cards. If, to sustain for a moment the same arbitrary hypothesis, the god Thor were alive and for some reason at large in England, then he would probably be the only person in the country who did not receive the constant barrage of invitations to apply for American Express card, crude threats by the same post to take their American Express cards away, and gift catalogues full of sumptuously unpleasant things, lavishly tooled in naff-brown plastic. Dirk found the idea quite breathtaking. That is, if he were the only god at large, which, once you were to accept the first extravagant hypothesis, was hardly likely to be the case. But imagine for a moment such a person attempting to leave the country, armed with no passport, no credit cards, merely the power to throw thunderbolts and who knew what else. You'd probably have to imagine a scene very similar to the one that did in fact occur at Terminal 2 Heathrow. But why, if you were a Norse god, would you be needing to leave the country by means of a scheduled airline? Surely there were other means. Dirk rather thought that one of the perks of being an immortal divine might be the ability to fly under your own power. From what he remembered of his reading of the Norse legends many years ago, the gods were continually flying all over the place. There was never any mention of them hanging around in departure lounges, eating crummy buns. Admittedly, the world was not, in those days, bristling with air traffic controllers, radar, missile warning systems, and the like. Still, a quick hop across the North Sea shouldn't be that much of a problem for a god, particularly if the weather was in your favour, which, if you were the god of thunder, you'd pretty much expect it to be, or want to know the reason why. Should it? Another tiny note sang in the back of Dirk's mind, and then was lost in the hubbub. He wondered for a moment what it was like to be a whale. Physically, he thought, he was probably quite well placed to get some good insights. Though whales were better adapted for their lives of gliding about in the vast pelagic blueness than he was for his of struggling up through the Pentonville Road traffic in a weary old Jaguar. But what he was thinking of, in fact, was the whales' songs. In the past, whales had been able to sing to each other across whole oceans, even from one ocean to another, because sound travels such huge distances underwater. But now, again because of the way in which sound travels, there is no part of the ocean that is not constantly jangling with the hubbub of ships' motors, through which it is now virtually impossible for the whales to hear each other's songs or messages. So fucking what is pretty much the way that most people tended to view this problem, and understandably so, thought Dirk. After all, who wants to hear a bunch of fat fish or all-right mammals burping at each other? But, for a moment, Dirk had a sense of infinite loss and sadness, that somewhere amongst the frenzy of information noise that daily rattled the lives of men, he thought he might have heard a few notes that denoted the movements of gods. As he turned north into Islington and began the long haul up past the pizza restaurants and estate agents, he felt almost frantic at the idea of what their lives must now be like.